हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सलि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
So continue the discussion between Vrajanath and the Babaji. So this is Babaji speaking. The goal of fruit of activities, karma, is material sense pleasure, mukti. The goal of philosophical speculation, jnana, is impersonal liberation, mukti. The goal of devotional service, bhakti, is pure love of God, prema bhakti. The final conclusion then is that bhakti is the final means, and the goal attained by bhakti is bhakti. Fruit of work, karma, and philosophical speculation, jnana, are then only the primary and intermediate links in the chain of means of goals. They are not the goal. So he was establishing the point that the means has to get the goal. And if it means the goal is not the final goal, then you can't call it the goal. It can only be actually called a step to the means. Like that. They are in the chain of trying to get something. It may be a goal now, but then there's something else to get. You know, so therefore it's just like you want, so you want to get something to eat, then that means then you have to get some, you know, let's say you have to go somewhere, so then you have to do something before you can go. So then doing that thing is a goal, but it's only a goal, it's only a means actually to your other goal, to get something to eat. So then you've done that, then the next thing is then your goal is to get to where you're going to get something to eat. So then when you get to that place, you've reached that goal, but that was still a means to still get what you want. So you have short-term goals that are actually just part of the process. They're not actually the goal. But devotional service, bhakti, is actually the goal. And once getting there, there isn't a further goal. So therefore, bhakti is the goal. And it's also the means. And then and these other aspects of karma and jnana are used as part of the process along with bhakti engages those. Because of our conditioned nature, therefore karma and jnana is engaged by us in the devotional process. But still, bhakti is the actual process and bhakti is the goal. Then Vrajanath, he then brings up another point. It is said in the scriptures, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 4.5.25 and 2.4.24, who is the seer and who is the seen? It is also said, Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 1.4.10, I am Brahman. It is also said, Aitreya Upanishad 1.5.3, Brahman is spiritual truth. It is also said, Chandogya Upanishad 6.8.70, O Sweta Ketu, you are that. In these and many other passages of scripture, it is not at all seen that devotional service is the final goal. Therefore, how can it be wrong to say that impersonal liberation is the final goal? Babaji, I have already said that the goals are different according to the different desires of the living entities. They who yearn after material sense pleasures do not accept liberation as the final goal. To these persons, the scriptures advise Apastamba Shrauta Sutra 2.1.1. They who perform the Chaturmasa Yajnas attain immortality. There are also many other passages like this. Baba, is this word mukti, liberation of any use at all? The fruit of workers, karmis, do not aspire for it. They ask, why is the word mukti, liberation, never mentioned in the mantras of the four Vedas? One or two karmi philosophers claim that renunciation is only meant for the incompetent, and they are competent, and those who are competent should be engaged in fruit of work karma. These instructions are written in the scriptures so that persons situated in the lowest level of spiritual qualification may be steady in their duties. It is not auspicious for the living entities to shirk the duties that fit their spiritual qualification. When a person is steady in the duties for which he is qualified, he easily becomes qualified for the next level of duties. Therefore, the Vedas do not criticize being steady in one's duties. Rather, one who criticizes the performance of duties himself falls down. The souls in this world who have become advanced in spiritual life have all reaped the good results of being steady in their duties. The impersonal path, where one employs philosophical speculation, jnana, to attain liberation, is not revealed to persons qualified only for fruit of work, karma. The impersonal path, where one employs philosophical speculation, jnana, to obtain liberation, is not praised in the presence of persons qualified only for fruit of work. The Vedic mantras praise it only in the presence of persons qualified to follow the impersonal path. As the impersonal path is superior to the path of fruit of work, so the path of devotional service is superior to the impersonal path. By speaking words like tattvamasi, you are that, and aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, the Vedic mantras make the impersonalist steady in his duties of acting to attain liberation. The Vedas are not to be blamed for doing that. Still, the impersonal liberation described there is not the ultimate stage. The final conclusion of the Vedic mantras is that the final goal is love of God, and that goal is attained by performing devotional service. So depending upon one's qualification, then one is situated in a particular place, and then that is said to be very glorious. It's said to fix people in their duties. Otherwise, the tendency we see is that if there's an idea that something else is higher, the people may aspire for that, though they're not qualified for it. You know, like if somebody is very new at something and you say, okay, so this is the standard thing and this is the advanced thing, they'll always take the advanced, even though they're not qualified for it. That's the natural thing. So we always want what's the more advanced stages. So the idea is so that one will be fixed in doing the duties that are appropriate for one's platform. Then the Vedic literatures describe them, you know, in all kinds of very nice language, so that one may be established in that endeavor. And then by doing that properly, then one will gradually be prepared for the next stage. So that's why the Vedic literatures talk about these things, because you're dealing with a very slow process of coming up through the process of karma and jnana. So it's quite slow. But for devotional service, once devotional service is established, then whatever elements in karma and jnana are useful to the advancement of the neophyte and the intermediate devotee, then those are applied, and then very quickly, in one lifetime, one can move through these things very, very quickly. So that's why these are placed here. So one should know that all these things that are said are for those who need to be situated in these places. Like that. Aham Brahmasmi is I am Brahman. Because the soul is Brahman. But we have to understand the soul's connection to the Supreme Brahman. Or Tat Brahmasmi, you are that, means we are Brahman still. You know, we are that. Whatever is that Supreme, we are that, means we are that. We are also Brahman, like that. It's not that we don't become the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but we understand that we are Brahman. That's the thing. And Brahman just means, even the material energy is Brahman, so then it's not something so unique. But it's just an inferior form of Brahman. The soul is a superior form of Brahman to material energy. Like that, superior to that's the internal potency, superior to that's the Supreme Lord. So he's the supreme of all this. Does that make any sense?
I was wondering, in the beginning you said that Babaji said that jnana leads to impersonal liberation. And then he said that this karma and jnana are like steps that help one elevate one to bhakti. But by nature, this process, at least of jnana, we know that is fundamentally opposed principles of bhakti, right? Because one is tend to be impersonal and that, to have all these misconceptions.
That's only the Mayavad. See, there's a difference between Mayavad conception and the impersonalist. The impersonalist doesn't know about higher platforms. The impersonalist, the Lord's form is spiritual. But everything is spiritual. For the Maya bodies, then anything form this that is Maya. So the Lord's form is also considered Maya. So they are not technically spiritualists, because some things are Brahman but some things are not. So how are they going to be an actual Brahma body? Right? It's all in the category of impersonalism. You know, but it doesn't actually mean that they're really impersonalists. They're Mayavadis, because they don't understand. It means for the Brahmavadi, the Lord's form would be eternal, because everything's Brahman. Brahman's eternal. But they're not interested or attracted to it, because they don't really know about it. That's not their focus.
Is the Brahmavadi sees any difference between the Lord's form and just any other ordinary form?
No, because all they're seeing is Brahman. They're not differentiating within Brahman.
I was thinking that if someone is an impersonalist and sees everything as one, then so that's still the same. I mean, you still don't appreciate the
No, that's why it's the lowest level of transcendence, because they don't distinguish between the various kinds of Brahman. Because Brahman has variety, so they're not distinguishing there. Therefore, they don't. But they can perceive Brahman.
Isn't such a person will necessarily, if you tell him that the form of the Lord is spiritual, I mean, will say that it's not possible because form means...
It means, if you really want to know, you're not going to meet impersonalists. It means Brahmavadis. Brahmavadis aren't sitting around with beards and giving lectures. Because why would you give lecture to someone else? They're already Brahman. You understand? The people who are lecturing, they're Mayavadis. Because even though they claim to be on the transcendental platform, they distinguish between spiritual and material. And they really can't tell what is really spiritual. So they're called Maya bodies because they're always actually absorbed in Maya. You know, they say the Lord's form is Maya, so they're different. It's a trick. It's actually Buddhism. It's not, because Buddhism, there's nothing. So there's not even being Brahman. So they're not really situated. Though they talk, they use the language, but they're not. They're not situated.
I have some difficulty to understand how a Brahmavadi would not think about the form of the Lord is illusion.
Why? No, but see the first here. Yeah. First point is, this is what the scriptures say, because it's Brahman. Why it would be, everything's Brahman. This is Brahman. In the Chedras, it's all Brahman. Maybe in different forms, those may be temporary. Temporarily manifest, or who knows. It's not their wording. Right? They're only absorbed in Brahman. So they're not interested in interacting with the Brahman. Because there is no need of interaction. Everything's just Brahman. You know, it's just you're on that platform of that much, so that's all they know. They don't really know about the form of the Lord. What I'm saying is for them it's not a problem, but they don't know about it. The Mayavadis know about it, but they reject it. But the impersonalists don't know. They only know about Brahman. The yogis, then they can differentiate between the soul and the super soul. So they can see those two aspects, but they don't know the relationship based on service and devotion, service and affection. That they don't know. That's only there in the part and Bhagavan aspect. So see here, he's a Mayavadi, but they categorize themselves as impersonalists. You know, but the process that they will use, and the process that a Brahmavadi will use, and the process that we use up to the liberated platform is the same. It's not a different path. The point is for them it's the ultimate goal. For us it's not the ultimate goal. It's just the path we go through. Does that make sense? Yeah. So we will go through that. You know, it's just like somebody wants to, the karmi wants to enjoy in this room, whatever is in this room. The Mayavadi wants to get out of this room, so they just get out and they stand in the doorway. You know, they're out of the room, they have nothing to do with the room. But they also have nothing to do with what's outside. And the devotee, he is going outside the room, and he'll, you know, be involved in the spiritual variety that's outside the room. So therefore, the door, going through the door, is the same thing. You have to give up attachment to what's here and leave this place. But that's then where it stops, because we leave this place to serve Krishna. So you give up attachments here to become attached to Krishna, because that's our natural position. That's because we're servant to Krishna. Means of Brahman, we're servants. But the impersonalist doesn't distinguish that. He just understands I am Brahman, but that's all. He doesn't understand that I am servant Brahman. There's Lord Brahman and there's servant Brahman. So he doesn't know about this relationship. So therefore, he can't actually come to a proper situation. Does that make sense? Vrajana. Is it possible that great Mahavakyas of the Vedas have described only secondary goals and means? Babaji, you may call some mantras Mahavakyas. Mahavakya means great, you know, great saying or something like that. Vakya means like order or speech like this. But the Vedas themselves do not distinguish any particular mantras as better than the others. In order to claim that their doctrine is superior, the impersonalist teachers have labeled some mantras Mahavakya, and all other Vedic mantras are subordinate to it. One wishes to call all the statements of the Vedas Mahavakyas. There's nothing wrong in that. However, if one wishes to label one particular mantra the Mahavakya, and all the others ordinary Vakyas, and one commits an offense to the sacred Vedas. In the Vedas there is praise for fruit of work, karma, praise for impersonal liberation, mukti, and praise for many other goals and means also. Still, one must consider everything as a whole, and determine that the final conclusion of all the Vedas, and determine what is the final conclusion of all the Vedas. The Vedas are like a cow, and the milkman is Lord Krishna. It is he who reveals the purpose of all the Vedas. He explains Bhagavad Gita 6:46 and 47. The yogi is greater than the ascetic, greater than the empiricist, and greater than the fruit worker. Therefore, O Arjuna, in all circumstances, be a yogi. And of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. In the Sweta Svatara Upanishad, In the Sri Tathagatara Upanishad 6.23, it is also said, only under those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master are all the imports of Vedic knowledge automatically revealed. In the Gopal Tathagata Upanishad 1.14, it is said, devotional service to Lord Krishna is performed when the heart no longer desires any material benefit to be obtained in this life or the next. This is freedom from the bonds of karma. Yes, so when you give up material benefit, then one comes to the platform of pure devotional service. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 148, it is said, one should worship the Supreme Lord, considering Him the most dear. In the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad 456, it is also said, one should gaze on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, hear about Him, think of Him, and meditate upon Him. One who analyzes these statements of the Vedas will easily see that devotional service is described in the Vedas as the means to attain the goal of life. Rajana. In the Karmakanda section of the Vedas, it is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate awarder of the fruits of karma. In this way, the Karmakanda enjoins one to have faith in devotional service. In the Jnanakanda also, pleasing Lord Hari by engaging in his devotional service is described as one of the four means of attaining the goal. If devotional service is thus one of the means employed to attain sense gratification and personal liberation, then how can devotional service be the final goal of life? When sense gratification or impersonal liberation are attained, then the means employed to get them are thrown away. That is what is generally taught. Please give me some clear teaching on this point. Because that's the impersonalist idea, is you use a method and when you get what you want, then that's thrown away. That includes the guru, the shastra, and everything else. Babaji. In the Karmakanda portion of the Vedas, it is said that one should engage in devotional service in order to attain sense gratification. And in the Jnanakanda portion of the Vedas, it is said that to attain impersonal liberation, one should engage in devotional service. That is true. Without first pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, no one can attain any result. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the abode of all potencies. The individual souls and the eternal world and the material worlds are only a small part of the Lord's potencies. The Supreme Lord is not pleased by fruit of work, karma, or impersonal speculations, jnana. However, when karma and jnana take shelter of devotional service, they can give certain results. Therefore, it is said that in karma and jnana, the reflection of devotional service is present. However, the devotional service seen in karma and jnana is not pure devotional service. It is merely a reflection of true devotional service, present there to give certain results. This reflection of devotional service is of two kinds. One, the reflection of pure devotional service, and two, the reflection of mixed devotional service. The reflection of pure devotional service, I will describe later on. The reflection of mixed devotional service is of three kinds. The reflection of devotional service mixed with karma, the reflection of devotional service mixed with jnana, and three, the reflection of devotional service mixed with both karma and jnana. At the time of performing a yajna, one may say, O Indra, O Surya, please be merciful and give me the result of this yajna. This is an example of the reflection of devotional service mixed with karma. Karma vidha bhakti bhas. So this is bhakti, describing bhakti bhas. Some philosophers call this reflected devotional service karma misra bhakti, devotional service mixed with karma. And others call it aropya siddha bhakti, artificial devotional service. Aropya also means like where you overlay something on something. Due to your perception, you see it in a particular way. You know, you value something or not. So that's aropya. You put your own idea on top of it. like eating, what you like to eat, then that is what you cook, like that. Because it's like, you know, you're putting your own idea over it. But actually, it's what Krishna likes to eat. That is the thing. So then that's direct. Well, the other one is you put this over. It's kind of like you see through that. Whatever you look at it through your own desires. So we see here is that this Bhakti Vas, Karma Vidha Bhakti Vas, so a Karma Misra Bhakti and a Ropya Siddha Bhakti. Another example is seen in the words, O Krishna, pushed by fear of repeated birth and death, I now approach you. Day after day I chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Please be merciful and give me impersonal liberation. Another example is the words, O Supreme Lord, you are Brahman, and I have fallen into the abyss of Maya. Please pick me up and make me one with you. These two statements are examples of reflection of devotional service mixed with jnana. Some philosophers call this kind of reflected devotional service jnana misra bhakti, devotional service mixed with jnana. And others call it aropa siddha bhakti, artificial devotional service. Oh, so it seems aropa also is in the karma and jnana. All these reflections of devotional service are different from pure devotional service. The devotional service described by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 6:47, Shradhavan Bhajate Yomam, is pure devotional service. It is that kind of devotional service that we adopt as the means to attain the goal of prema, pure love of God. Karma and jnana are the means to attain sense gratification and impersonal liberation. They are not the means for the individual soul to regain his eternal nature. So here, Karma Misra and Jnana Misra Bhakti, then means there's pure devotional service, mixed devotional service. So this is an example of mixed. So now, specifically here, is the problem is Krishna is not interested or attracted by karma or jnana, either of these. And since he's the one that gives results to activities, then it will be very difficult to attract his attention because there's nothing there of interest to him and he's the one that gives the results. Therefore, then this karma, I mean this bhakti, these karma and jnana may be mixed with the touch of bhakti so that it attracts the attention of the Lord and one can get results. So you get some little results. Because what you're asking for is something very little. Bhakti can give so much more. So, therefore, one seemingly approaches the Lord with some devotion, but one's purpose is to get the fruitive results or impersonal liberation. So that kind of devotional service, it's mixed, and that should be... But for those who are interested in pure devotional service, that should be dropped. But he's explaining why it's there, because the allegation has been used that if bhakti is a means to get the results of karma and jnana, how can it be the ultimate goal? Because it's being used as a means within these lower levels, if we're saying that devotion for Krishna is the highest. Does that make sense? There's a real subtle point because he's dealing with a very knowledgeable, impersonalist and nyayist, so it has to get down to subtle points. Is that we're saying that karma and jnana are temporary means that they're not goals. They can be means used to get in the process of getting the actual goal. Of bhakti like that, but they themselves do not award bhakti. They may be engaged, but they themselves are not, because bhakti is the goal. The means has to get the end. They can't get the end, so therefore that's not brought out so much in this point, because he's just trying to establish that there's three levels like that. Within the devotees we'll bring this out, but he's bringing out that they will be used as part of the means, that they're attaining them is not the goal. That is the bhakti. So then Rajanath brings the point out, but bhakti is used as part of the meat, as part of the means to get fruit of result and impersonal liberation. Therefore, how can you say bhakti is the highest? Because if bhakti is supposed to give the highest goal, why is it being used to get these lower goals, since you've established that they're lower? Right? Babaji has said that karma is the lowest, then jnana, then bhakti. But if bhakti is used to get karma and jnana, how can it be the highest? You know, so he's trying to move bhakti out of there, so then naturally it leaves only karma and jnana, and of the two, then jnana is higher than karma. So therefore, impersonalism will be the ultimate goal, and bhakti is used as a means to get it.
By impersonalists?
Yeah, by impersonalists.
But
bhakti is
not so easily attainable.
But this mistra is, you're going to the Lord and just asking Him, I want liberation or I want fruit of results. In other words, bhakti mentioned here, he points out that this is not pure devotional service. This is mixed devotional service. So you're approaching the Supreme Lord, you're worshipping the Supreme Lord, but with the intention of getting material benefit or personal liberation.
Asking the Lord to give them something, that means the Lord is superior to what they're going to get. Because He's the one who is giving.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. It's a very good point. Yeah. Yeah. So here then he's pointed out that these two are there. So for devotees, we understand that these are to be avoided. We shouldn't be asking the Lord for material facilities or for liberation. You know, because he's established here that it's mixed devotional service. So that's what we can do, benefit for here. Okay. But this is, see, this is also, if is the point is this person, Rajanath, knows the scriptures. So only he will bring this out. Many others won't bring this out. They won't know. They'll agree that it's one of the methods that one can use to get liberation. Like that. I think he mentioned it's one of four methods. So they must do that. They must use austerity. They must use meditation. They must have something. Yeah, that's a good point. After hearing all this, Rajanath could not ask any questions. He thought it would be good to make the argument for the Nyaya Shastra wait for a while as I think about these 7 points. But Sandy Babaji is especially learned about this topic. In time, I will ask him questions and then I will learn what is the truth of this. Now it is night, I should return home. Then Rajana said aloud, O Sandy Babaji, I have learned many truths from you today. From time to time I will return. Please continue to instruct me. You are a very great teacher, and I am dependent upon your mercy. There is one thing I wish to know. When I hear you reply, I will depart. Did Lord Gauranga, the son of Sachi, write any book of his teaching? I would like to have such a book. Babaji, Sri Mahaprabhu did not write any book himself. By his order, his followers wrote many books. Mahaprabhu personally wrote 8 verses called Shikshastaka, which are like the jewels the devotees wear around their necks. The teaching in them are very profound. Studying these deep truths, the devotees have written a poem called Dasamul, the 10 roots. In this poem, the goal and means are briefly described in terms of sambandha, the relationship of the living entities with the Supreme, abhideya, the activities of that relationship, and prayojana, the final goal of life. You should begin by understanding this poem. Rajanath replied, As you order, tomorrow evening I will return and learn this Dasamul from you. You are my Siksha Guru, instructing spiritual master. I offer Dandabat obeisances to you. The saintly Babaji politely embraced him and said, Baba, you purify the community of Brahmanas. Please come tomorrow evening. That will please me very much.
he first felt to himself, I will keep the good arguments for later.
No, it wasn't so much the good arguments. He had to think about it. These are very subtle points. So he's a nyayist who was always interested. He was very great, and he had written his own commentary on the Nyaya Shastra. Then someone came up to him and said, have you heard about Nimai Pandit? Because he also wrote his own commentary. And he was, you know, great. It means he taught his own commentary, he didn't write. So he was then very, and he defeated so many great scholars. So then this person became absorbed in that, hearing about that and hearing what people said. So he got to the point where he liked hearing about Lord Chaitanya, anything to do with his teaching. You know, how he taught grammar and this and that. And then slowly, by doing this and chanting the holy name with the Vaishnavas, then he developed, you know, also an attraction for hearing about the Lord's pastimes. But he was still, Nyaya is his main. The Nyaya Shastra is what he's very expert at. So therefore he approached to find out about this, because he wanted to talk to whoever was, you know, very profound in this. And so then they put him in contact with this one, Balaji. So he's interested, you know. He's performed Ajata Sukriti in the way of chanting the Lord's holy name, associating with the Vaishnavas, hearing about the Lord's pastimes and all that. But he hasn't come to the point of full faith, you know, that this process is, you know, really proper like that. So it's he's basically kind of starting to perform devotional service. But it hasn't come to the really serious point like that. So he's taken up sadhusanga like that. But he hasn't really come to the point of being really fixed in it.
When you perform devotional service without much of a relationship with the Supreme, like your heart is that you want to do devotional service, could you call that bhakti?
It's called bhakti, but it means it depends upon how technical you're getting. It's within the general category of bhakti. But if you get very technical, then it's not necessarily pure devotion, because it depends upon whether we are interested in fruit of results or liberation from that performance of that relationship.
Is it being interested in going back to Godhead?
Going back to Godhead means you get out of here, then that's more the interest in liberation. Going back to Godhead is to be able to serve Krishna and please Krishna. And that is more on the devotional side. You know? Means in the beginning it's natural that there will be this karma or jnana and this bhakti, because you see as those who approach, that is their interest. And the artha, artarti, jigyasu means one who's in distress, one who's in need of money, one who's and one who is inquisitive. You know, they're just interested, you know. You know, we've heard something about the spiritual subject matter. What is this Gita? What is God? You know, we've heard about Krishna. So you want to know, then that's jigyasu. You know? But then, higher than that, but still in the neophyte platform, is the jnani, who wants to know the Lord and serve the Lord. But he may have his own, he may have material desires from that. But he actually wants to know the Lord, so that he's considered the best of these four. But then one goes beyond, should go beyond that to pure devotional service. One is not interested in fruitive or speculative results from one's devotional service. Like that. But the first stage is, if one is focused on Krishna, then that's very good. You know, it's just like little children. They're focused on the mother. Right? But the only thing they're interested from the mother is that, you know, they feed them and, you know, they get whatever they want from them. They don't, on their own, really give anything back. Mother is gaining something from it, relationship with the child itself is not conscious of actually giving anything to the mother. Right? But they're dependent upon the mother, so therefore the mother is pleased with that. So that's why the jnani is then considered pleasing to the Lord. All of them are, they've approached the Lord, therefore that's good. The jnani is better. Jnani in this sense, meaning they want to know the Lord himself. Not that they're just interested in the knowledge, but they actually want to know the Lord. So this is different. The one word is used in many different ways. When we say the jnanis, then we generally mean the impersonalist. But here, jnani doesn't mean the impersonalist. Of artha, arthartha, jigyasu, and jnani. Jnani means one who knows the Lord is there. The others don't really know who the Lord is, what is going on. Right? It means they know God is there, and if there's a big problem, they can turn to God. You know? That's the meaning there, but they don't really know. But the jnani is one who knows who God is. You know, he knows his Krishna. He knows about his service and everything like that. And he wants to serve. He wants to please. But he may still have a mix of karma and jnana there.
It's not called a bhakta, it's called
a jnani. Of those who approach the Lord, these Krishna is given these four categories. He's a devotee. You know? Yeah. These are the definitions given in Bhagavad Gita. Like that. So Krishna says that the jnani, he is. But jnani meaning one who knows. Not meaning jnani means who mental speculation is his field of activities. You know?
But he has to
He knows the Supreme Lord. He knows Vishnu. He's a devotee of Vishnu. Doesn't necessarily have to be Krishna, but it needs to be Vishnu. Like that. So
anyone who just is looking for God and wants to please God and meet again with God, but doesn't know it's Vishnu or Krishna, is not a jigyasu.
Yeah, jigyasu is just interested to know what is this topic about God. What do the Vedic literatures have to say? You know, what is this Gita? You know, what is these different aspects?
He has already realized, you know, the presence of God and
But then generally that will put him into the jigyasu. I mean, put him into the jnani category.
Even if he doesn't know that God is Krishna.
But if he knows it's Vishnu, but if he doesn't, then that will be jigyasu. Because he still has to know. Jnani means he knows Vishnu. And he wants to serve Vishnu. So it means he's actually situated in devotional service. The other three are not. The other three are coming, you know, maybe getting faith in devotional service, maybe associating, in this way kind of getting. But the jnani means that he's situated, you know. So basically it means the jnani would be in Bhajana Kriya. I mean, not that, yeah, it would be. Well, the others would be lower than that. Though they may take up Bhajana Kriya if that's what it takes to learn the thing. Because they're smart enough to understand this is part of the process how I learn, so they take it up. And then once they gain some knowledge, then they go off, you know. Like that. No, they may go off. They may leave. Once they get what they want, they leave. There's every chance they'll leave. The man who approaches God for money, when he gets the money, he may leave. The man who has an anxiety, he approaches God. When the anxiety is not there, he may leave. Or the one who wants knowledge, he approaches God, gets that knowledge, and then he may leave. But the jnani doesn't leave because he wants to know God. He wants to develop that relationship with God. So it means he's better situated. But still it's considered, these three are considered neophytes. That, because then one has to clear all, you know, doubts and everything, and then becomes situated. Then he's situated in pure devotional service. Otherwise, the other four, it's mixed. It's mixed devotional service. The first two, you know, specifically karma, and then the third one means you're the one who's interested in money or getting rid of anxiety, and that's specifically karma. The one who wants because they want to get rid of the anxiety and then be happy here. It's not the one, you know. And the jigyasu, you know, is interested in knowledge. So generally that tends to be towards the impersonal. Like that. And then the jnani is situated in devotional service. But it's still the neophyte. He wants to know, you know, God, he wants all these different things. But still there may be these mix, material mixes that, you know, for some slightly doing. But then madhyam, then that's pure devotional service. So that means there'll be no mix of karma and jnana. And that their motive is not that. They simply want to serve the Supreme Lord. Please the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense?
Sometimes it seems that they are religionists who are very much advanced on, I mean, in terms of wanting relationship with God, and I don't want to use the word bhakti because they don't exactly serve the personal form of God, but they don't know it's Krishna. So, but they are not very jigyasu because they are more in, they are interested more than just curiosity. They are really from their heart, they really want to have service relationship with God, but they just still don't know who God is like that. I mean, so which category will they?
No, you have to see what is their purpose. What do they want?
If they really want relationship or service with God, they would consider to be
minded. Yeah. I mean, you know such people, or you just say.
I heard about two of them from one of my sources.
Yeah.
So did they really have?
Yeah. So if they really want to know, then when you point out, then do they take it or not? You know what I'm saying? If they take it, then yes, you could call them. They would move on. But they're inquisitive still. You know, they want to know God, they want to know, but they don't know. So how can they can't be situated. Well, situated. Because you have to know who they want to love God, but they have to know who God is.
It's not possible because we know that in Western religions they have
religion.
Okay, I'm sorry, my English is not so. I mean, a person is practicing a very strict discipline of religion, and he might take it properly in order to establish friendship with God, but still the identity of God is not clear.
Yeah, well, is God a person? Or is God not a person?
Yeah, I think as a person also.
It might, but you're just saying, might is...
I'm trying to understand the principle of it.
No, but point is why I bring up something, you know, do pigs fly? What if a pig flies? How many wings would he need? Now, wings, they're pretty fat. Maybe they'd need four wings, because birds are quite light, so two wings is enough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is just to make it up that possibly, you know what I'm saying? Is that unless you know of something, then what's the meaning? Possibly, then there could be so many things. What if my, Ford Impala, you know, suddenly one day becomes conscious and wants to know God, what category would he be in? You know, we could say, well, the cars don't come, what if he did? You know? I mean, they make movies about it. You know what I'm saying? Matter comes to consciousness, so many movies are like, because they don't know. So what I'm saying is, to just make it up, what's the meaning? There has to be something, some basis for it. To say, what if, and if you don't know, what if they're not? I mean, as far as I know, there's so many within the, you know, those who are, their, you know, religions are based off the Old Testament, you know, so the Judaic, the Christian, and Islam. They'll say God's a person, but if you push the point, they'll say he's impersonal. So therefore, you know what I'm saying? It's they're kind of engaging sentiment because it's there, but ultimately they're impersonalists. You know, so you have to see if they actually have faith that God is eternal, has a spiritual form and all that. Those have been very rare. I don't know if there's people like that now. There have been a few in the past. So therefore, it's very, what's the purpose, what good it will do you?
Could I have some concept about that these paths, when practiced properly and moderate, they could lead a person? I mean, they
lead a person to what?
To a sincere relationship.
You have to have a relationship. Okay. Could you, okay, let us say you want to develop a sincere relationship with, okay, there's a person, but we don't know if they have a form or not, or how many arms or legs or head, or if you even have any of those, or they're just a blob. You want to develop a sincere relationship, you don't know who they are, what their name is, where they live, nothing about them. Can you develop a relationship? No, you have to know something about a person to develop a relationship. There must be something in common.
But the desire could be there.
Desire could be there, but the point is unless the desire can fix, just like young boys and young girls have the desire to meet the opposite sex, but it just sits there as the desire. But until they see someone, only then they can become attracted and attached. Then only you can act to make that relationship, you know, something valid. Just because it's there. Just like you have hunger in your stomach. But you have to know what food is. If you don't know what food is, then who knows what you'll put in your mouth. You know? You have to know your stomach, your mouth, food, and the whole process. Otherwise, how... Relationship means you have to know what two elements are. If I just have this alone, there's no relationship. But this and something else, then you have a relationship. You know? So that's the point. Sentiment has its limit. There has to be proper understanding. Sentiment's not enough. See, that is the model, that's the Protestant idea. Sentiment's all you need. You don't need anything else. But they reject everything else that you could have sentiment towards. Right? There's no music, there's no art, there's no nothing. So anything you could have sentiment towards, they reject it. So then, you understand?
If you don't have any idea about what this God is, then the best you can do is that, what can I get from this something?
Means, what do they want to gain from it? They want to love God, but do they know about spiritual love? Okay, you want to love God, but then you love a person, you expect them to love you back. You know, and then what are you going to get out of them? What is that? What form does that love take? Just love, but in what form? Love in service, love in friendship, love in parental, love in conjugal, or just an appreciation, that's all, from a distance. You know, you appreciate God's great. But, if there's desire for service, then it's going to the next level. But what is that? Then the Lord is master. Then how you expect? Well, who are you to be? You know, how are you going to render that service? In what form? Do they know their spirit? What does spirit mean? To them, spirit means this. Otherwise, why do they keep it in a box and, you know, figure that one day it'll rise up? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, they don't know who they are. They don't know who God is. So there's a need for it. But they don't know how they're going to get there, how they'll get anywhere, what's the process. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah, it means they have to have. The religion itself is not complete. It deals with certain elements, but it doesn't deal with everything. You know, it hasn't even made the difference between the body and the soul. I think the body is the soul. If the body is the soul, then why do we worry so much about all our emotions and happinesses and distress? If the body is the soul, then as long as the body is, you know, alive, then you should be happy. So why is the body alive, but then so many anxieties come and then you're unhappy? Because when the body dies, all those emotions and that aren't there anymore. You know? So if it's just the body, then why, what's so lamentable about death? Because the body's still there. Why do we say the person has gone to heaven? But the body is there. At the same time, that body is supposed to go to heaven. So, you know, it doesn't make sense. That's the whole point, is they deal with some sentiment like that. That's it. You know, some little sentiments come up, they address that only, but only in the realm of sentiment. There's no logic behind it, no truth behind it. You know, some very low-level truth, meaning it's not on the religious platform. Actually, technically, they're not religions. They're sub-religions. Because they only deal with good, nice, you know, be good to your neighbor, be nice, don't steal your neighbor's cow, don't steal his wife, you know, don't steal his, you know, like this. That's what they say. These are the Ten Commandments, are like the highest pinnacle, you know. And that's just be nice. Okay, don't do this, don't do that. But what are you supposed to do? Right? What are you supposed to do? Yeah. So therefore, it's good. That's just been explained in the previous part of the chapter. It's good. But it has a limit. For persons on a lower spiritual level, whatever level they're at, there's a form of religion for them to engage them. By following that properly, sincerely, they'll move to the next level. But it itself is not going to get the goal. See, they don't even know God. They don't know the process. They don't know about approaching Guru. They don't know about any of these things. What are the rules and regulations? You know, if you want to advance or not advance. You want to worship the Supreme Lord, then you don't eat meat and you don't drink alcohol. You know, you want to approach, you know, to demigods, then you can offer those things. You know, ghosts and other things. You can offer those things. You know? So at that level. But at least they know who they are. You know, those who are worshipping Shiva or Kali, they know who Shiva and Kali is. And here, they want to know the Lord. They don't know. And the process is, you know, they're working on a very basic level.
Means
if that is one's desire, one asks. But it's just like, let us say, what would be a deeper friendship? A friendship where you are the other person's friend because what you're getting from them? Or a friendship is there is because you just like to be with them and do things for them? Is that, you understand the difference? Like that. So that's the idea, is that we can approach God for things and He'll reciprocate on that platform. But if we're approaching just that we would like to please Him and learn how to please Him, according, that's appropriate for our level of advancement. So when we're beginning stages, then we follow the rules and regulations, you know, what to do, what not to do. And by doing that, that pleases the Lord. And then slowly, slowly, then our whole, you know, mind, our intelligence, our identity, our devotion, then we'll slowly, slowly become gradually developed and engaged in this service. So in the beginning, basically, you know, fundamental points of the philosophy and basically our activities will be engaged.
But you said you cannot ask for liberation. But if I pray for my friends for good health, for example, I ask something. It's not bhakti.
It's not as good. It means it's better as you ask that they become God conscious. That would be better.
That's also liberation.
No, God consciousness is not liberation. It's liberation just means getting out of a difficult situation. But the other is positive, right? You know, like that. that they become aware of who they actually are, and that's the best welfare for them, you know? Because otherwise their health, other things, it's temporary. Like that, but if they become God conscious, then that's long term, that's eternal. Does that make sense?
Yeah. God consciousness, I thought liberation is
the
same
for me. No, it's a step farther. Because liberation just means out of the material world, but not into the spiritual world. Well, God consciousness means into the spiritual world. Like that.
So run away.
Huh?
You can see liberation as a runaway.
I just want to run away from here. It's a bad place. It's natural that one wants to get away from here. But getting away from here, where will you go? That's the point. Just to get away from here is not enough. Just like a child's in the house, they're having a bad time, they just want to run away. Then they run out and they go out in the forest, and then what do? And then they come back. Right? So unless they have someplace to go, then they'll just come back. So liberation is still one will come back to the material world, because they have no place to go. You go out in the material world, and then what do? So you come back. So if you become God conscious and you leave the material world, you go to the spiritual world. And then there you can stay, because there, you know, there you have people and friends in the Supreme Lord's there, so you have something you can do. Does that make sense? Yeah. So this is chapter 13. Eternal religion and Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. Evidence and truth. Nitya Dharma, Sambandha Abhidheya Prayojana Pramana Vichar O Prameya Arambha. Pramana Vichar or Prameya Arambha. So this means he's going to now start talking about eternal truth and the elements of Sambandha Abhidheya Prayojana. It's been introduced before slightly, but now it'll be given in much deeper form by the looks of it, because before it was hidden in the text. If you knew this, you could see it, but if not, it wouldn't. So now he's going to describe these three, but it says Praman Bichar, means the details of Praman, because in the Dasa Mulgan, the first is evidence, or the Shastra, the evidence, the authority, that's first. Then after that, there's nine truths, like that. So one evidence, nine truths, so that makes ten mulas, ten roots of the whole philosophy. So this is going to be, it seems to be a detail on the vichar, a detail on praman, on evidence, and it says prameya arambha. So it's the beginning stage, a glimmer or a look into the truths.
Sorry, Maharaj, what is this about? The truths about what?
Means you have dasamul. You know dasamul?
I'm not sure.
Dasamul are the ten truths given by Lord Chaitanya. Means the first is praman, is the shastra, scriptural evidence, right? The guru sadhu shastra. Then the prameyas are the truths that are based on those shastras. So then there's basically three categories. Is those about the Supreme Lord? Well, there's three main categories. Is the relationship with the Supreme Lord, the process of serving the Supreme Lord, and the ultimate goal. And in relationship with the Supreme Lord, that is broken into three parts. Knowledge about the Lord, knowledge about the soul, knowledge about the material world. You know, and then how they all three fit together. So that's the Dasa Mula. Like that. So it seems that he's going to speak more about the scriptural evidence, and then he's going to start to introduce those three other areas, Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. The next evening, Vrajana sat down under the bokul tree facing the courtyard of Srivasa's home. The saintly elderly Babaji had developed a kind of paternal love for Vrajana. He was waiting for Vrajana to come. When Vrajanath arrived, the Babaji at once came out from the courtyard. Embracing Vrajanath, he took him to his cottage, Bhajan Kutir, in a grove of jasmine vines to one side of Srivasa's courtyard. Touching the dust of the saintly Babaji's feet, Vrajana thought that his life had now become successful. He humbly said, "O saintly Babaji, please teach me the Dasa Mool, which contains the essence of our Lord Nimai's teachings." His heart blossoming with happiness to hear this very appropriate question, the elderly Babaji said, "Baba, I will explain the Dasa Mool to you. You are a pundit. Please carefully understand the truths described in these verses. The first verse is this. The Vedas teach that Lord Hari is the Supreme Lord. He has all potencies, and he is an ocean of the nectar of transcendental mellows. The individual spirit souls, which are his part and parcels, are divided into groups, some swallowed up by material energy, and others free from her clutches. Everything that exists is simultaneously one and different from him. Pure devotional service is the way to attain Lord Hari. The goal of life is to love him. Thus, this Lord Gauranchandra personally taught to the living entities." So that was the Dasa Mool right there. Means the Vedas teach. Okay, the Vedas are the evidence. That's one. That Lord Hari is the supreme truth. That's the first of the Pramehas, or the second Mula. He is all potencies, that's the third. And he is an ocean of nectar of transcendental mellows, that's the fourth. So we see those three truths are about the Supreme Lord. Then, let's see, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 1, 2, is part and parcels. Okay. Okay, so that's it. The individual souls are parts and parcels. That's then the fifth one. They're divided into two groups. Some swallowed up by material energy. That's the sixth. And others free from her clutches. That's the seventh. Everything that exists is simultaneously one and different from him. That's the eighth. Pure devotional service is the way to attain Hari. That's the ninth. And the goal of life is to love him. That's the tenth. So Vedas is the Praman. And then of the nine Prameyas, then in Sambandha, about the Lord, then you have the three about the Lord, the three about the living entities, and everything is Achintaveda-Veda-Tattva. So those seven make up Sambandha. Then, pure devotional service is the way to attain the Lord, that's Abhideya, and the goal of life is to love Him, that's Prayajna. Does this make sense? In the verses that begin here, Sriman Gaurachandra teaches 10 truths to the faithful souls. Of these, the first verse describes the various kinds of evidence, and the remaining 9 verses describe various truths learned from these evidences. First, the evidence is given, then the truths that may be learned from that evidence. Evidence is called Praman. The verse I have just recited is an introductory verse that contains a summary of the Dasamula. The verse that follows it is the first verse of the Dasamula proper. In verses 2 through 8, the relationship, sambandha of the souls and the Lord is revealed. In the ninth verse, the activities, abhideya of that relationship is described. In verse 10, the truth, the true need of the living entities, prayojana, is described. The meaning of the introductory summary verse is this. The word Amnaya means the statements of the Vedas, as they are understood through disciplic succession. So that first one is Amnaya Prahatattvam. So Amnaya means the Vedas. Amnaya means that it's eternal. The Vedas, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and other Smriti Shastras that follow the Vedas, and the direct perception and other kinds of evidence that support the evidence of Scripture are called Praman or evidence. So the Vedas themselves, the Bhagavatam, the other smritis that follow the Vedas, and the direct perception and other kinds of evidence that support the evidence of the Scripture are called praman, or evidence. So direct, it means you see, Scripture says something, you know, this material world is the place of misery, then you see that, so that evidence, that's the basis, that's called praman, evidence. So it means the Veda itself, the Bhagavatam, the essence of the Vedas, all the other Scriptures that are following that, and then all other kinds of evidence that support the evidence of the Scripture, and that is going. So in that kind of order. These evidence support the following definite conclusions. 1. Lord Hari is the Supreme Truth. 2. He has all potencies. 3. He's an ocean of nectar of transcendental mellows. 4. The two liberated and conditioned souls are as parts and parcels. 5. Some souls are imprisoned in the material energy, and others are free from her clutches. 6. The entire material universe, which contains both matter and spirit, is conceivably simultaneously one and different from him. 7. Devotional service is the way to obtain Lord Hari. And 8. The goal of life is to love Krishna. Somehow they didn't know where this problem was. Because otherwise here you only have 8 and there's supposed to be 9. Two through eight, the relationship is sambandha. And here he's given 2 through... See, 8 is already here. Oh, I see. 1? Okay, he's taken that. So 1 through 7. He's already got there, so he didn't split this. To liberate his souls as part and parcels. Then 6, some are imprisoned, and then the next is some are free. After hearing the summary verse, Vajana said, O saintly Babaji, now is not the time for me to ask any questions. After you recite the first verse, I will speak any questions that may arise in my heart. Hearing this, the elderly Babaji said, Good, good. I will recite the first of these mula verses. Please listen carefully. The self-evident Vedas, which by Lord Hari's mercy are obtained from the disciplic succession, beginning with the demigod Brahma, and which are accompanied by other sources of evidence, such as direct perception, are the evidence for the following 9 truths. Ordinary logic called Tarka has no power to enter a discussion of these truths. Rajanath, is there any evidence in the Vedas that Brahma taught disciples? Babaji, yes. There's the Mukunda Upanishad, 111. It is said, Brahma, who is the first demigod, the creator of the universe, protector of the world, spoke knowledge of the Supreme, the first of all kinds of knowledge, to his eldest son, Atharva. There it is also said, Mukunda Upanishad 1.2.13, Brahma taught him the science of the eternal Supreme Person. Vrajana, is there any evidence that when they wrote the Smriti Shastras, sages gave the proper interpretations of the Vedas? Babaji, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the crest jewel of all scriptures, the Supreme Personality of Godhead itself explains, 11.14.3, at the time of cosmic annihilation, the Vedas became lost. At the beginning of the next creation, I again taught the Vedas to the demigod Brahma. For the principles of true religion are my very heart. Then Brahma repeated this knowledge to his first son, Manu. Then the 7 great sages, whose leader is Bhrigu, learn this knowledge from Manu. Rajanath, is there a Vaishnava disciplic succession? Babaji, misled by impersonalism, many people in the world have left the true path. The devotees untainted by impersonalism do not have their own succession. Then it will be very difficult to associate with true devotees of the Lord. In the Padma Purana it is written, unless you are initiated by a bona fide spiritual master in the disciplic succession, the mantra that you have that might have received is without any effect. The 4 Vaishnava disciplic successions, beginning from Lakshmi Devi, Brahma, Shiva, and Sanat Kumara, have purified the entire world. Of all these, the disciplic succession from Lord Brahma is the oldest. The disciplic succession begins with Brahma and extends even to the present day. The Vedas, Vedangas, Vedanta, and other scriptures have been passed down unchanged from ancient time, carefully preserved by this disciplic succession. Nothing has been changed or added to the scripture under the care of the disciplic succession. Therefore, no one should doubt that the Vedas and other scriptures that are accepted by the bona fide civic succession are authentic. There's a great need for a bona fide disciplic succession. Therefore, from the earliest time, the great saints have followed the bona fide disciplic succession. Rajanath. Yeah. Okay. Then it gets into this whole disciplic succession. The list contain the names of only the most important acharyas. It is their names that are included in the lists. Rajanath, I wish to hear the list of acharyas in the specific succession from Brahman. Brahman means Brahma. Brahmaji, Babaji, here is the list. Lord Brahma is the direct disciple of Vishnu, the Lord of the spiritual sky. His disciple is Narada. Narada's disciple is Vyas. And Vyasa's disciples are Sukadeva Goswami and Madhvacharya. Padmanabhacharya is the disciple of Madhvacharya. Narahari is the disciple of Padmanabhacharya. Madhva is the disciple of Narahari, and Akshobhya is the direct disciple of Madhva. And Jayatirtha is the disciple of Akshobhya. Jayatirtha's disciple is Gyanasindhu, and his disciple is Mahanidhi. Vidyanidhi is the disciple of Mahanidhi, and Rajendra is the disciple of Vidyanidhi. Jayadharma is the disciple of Rajendra, and Purushottam is the disciple of Jayadharma. Sriman Lakshmipati is the disciple of Vyasatirtha, who is the disciple of Purushottama. And Madhavendra Puri is the disciple of Lakshmipati. Okay. Is there any questions on this? Up to now, otherwise, then we'll end here.
Why do austerities and ignorance hurt the Paramatma? Harm the Paramatma?
Because they have nothing to do with the relationship with him.
Then Papa gave the example.
Well, one, austerities and ignorance means you just make them up. So you made them up so Krishna's not involved in the move. You know, Baba gives the example of like it's freezing cold outside, but the lady's out on the street in a miniskirt. That's austerity. But austerity is a mode of ignorance. You know, because it's simply for a sense gratification. So therefore, the Lord's not there, so therefore it bothers him. But if you follow austerities that according to Shastra, then even if you're not devoted to the Lord, at least you're following his direction. So at least from that side, there's an indirect connection.
It's very difficult to understand why the Lord is bothered by those who are not following him, because he doesn't mean anything.
No, but the point is why is he taken up? Why did he create this material world? So that there's an opportunity for living and to just go back. See, is for us, there's duality, there's friend and foe. So devotees, then we're friendly. Those who are not, then we don't care about. You know, who cares? But for Krishna, everybody's his parts and parcels. So they're all connected with him. So he has a relationship with all of them. So it naturally bothers him if they're not operating in that relationship. Because then both he and the living entity are not happy on that platform. Living entity without Krishna means he's not actually established in his rightful position, so he can't know who he is. Does that make sense?
When we're preaching to if our preaching doesn't carry out good success, like a good result, then we shouldn't feel guilty, we shouldn't minimize our service, because also the Lord is not able to convert people.
No, it's not a matter of that. I mean, he is... That's not so much the point.
The point is that we try our best. It doesn't, just because we're not getting result, then we don't give up the process. We understand the Lord is just giving the result, but at the same time, is we always, if we're not getting good result, means we're doing something wrong. Like that. You know, it means I would say we're not applying ourselves properly, or we're not endeavoring enough. Otherwise, Krishna would show us some way to make something work. If not in that place, in some other place. You know, there would naturally be some success somewhere.
Yeah, because the process is completely dynamic and scientifically important. So.
Yeah, it means a process of work. It means maybe what you're doing, you're not getting results in that area, because that's actually not what you're not supposed to be doing that. So it's like maybe you need to adjust it so that it does work. You know, so that you're satisfied, the Vaishnavas are satisfied, it's according to Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Like that. So maybe we're doing one thing, you know, we're preaching to make apple trees, you know, bigger apples for Krishna or something. If we're not getting it, then okay, maybe we should be doing something else, you know. Technically, then the best thing is to stand up. It means if you have some particular, you see him as a senior person, have respect. The natural thing is to stand up. You don't have to leave the place, but you stand up, and then as he leaves, you know, and goes some distance, so it's kind of like he's out of the area, then you sit down again, if you want to sit in that place and continue chanting.
Doesn't it look like too formal?
What's wrong with formal?
When you were leaving the room,
I don't think it'll bother the Jaya Pataka Maharaj.
Will you be pleased with that?
See, there's a difference between me and Jaya Pataka Maharaj.
Depends for whom.
No, but I'm saying is Jaya Pataka Maharaj, if that respect is offered, he reciprocates that. You know what I'm saying? Because if the formality is there, he'll reciprocate that. Like that. I myself, if I know that was going to happen, I just wouldn't show up. So you wouldn't have to worry about it. What I'm saying is he's willing to reciprocate that. You know, like devotees that offer all kinds of, you know, respect and all that. And he'll reciprocate that, because otherwise, especially with so many devotees, they don't have so many opportunities that they can render in a service. So he reciprocates through those situations. Like that. And he's quite comfortable.
Also, you were mentioning about relationships. If you have a relationship with someone, you expect that person to reciprocate.
See, also, if you're worried it's too formal, you can always sit at the back. And if you're already sitting at the back, then you won't be noticed anyway. You know what I'm saying? He's sitting in the middle of the temple room, you're sitting at the back, you know, against the wall, and so if he stands up, you stand up, then no one will notice. You're sitting right next to him, then they might notice. But I don't think it's going to bother anybody or anything. Not in that environment. It's not. I don't think his disciples will say anything, or anybody else will say anything. You know.
But then you're saying yourself you would be disturbed by it, so... When do we know what would disturb you and what would be the proper course of etiquette?
Means the etiquette has to be followed. It's just whether the person wants to be around to, you know, deal with it. That's another thing. But if the proper etiquette is done, it's proper, it's good. Means, see, if one or two people, it's not going to bother me. But if I have, you know, 200 people do it, that's when I wouldn't show up. But if that was the only situation that was there, then that's what you have to. Saying it's proper, it must be done. So therefore, you deal on your side of what your duties are, right? And then it's up to the other person how they're going to adjust with that. And you perform your duties.
Also, if
see, it depends on the mood it's done in. Also, if it's done in the proper mood, the proper activity, then it's not a disturbance. If it's done and everybody else who doesn't stand up is a nonsense demon, then those are the kind of situations where I won't show up.
Is there instances when it's a better etiquette to do something or not do something which would embarrass the spiritual master, rather than follow the so-called formal etiquette?
Then it's just a matter of asking. Because the formal etiquette's always good, unless it's in a situation that's inappropriate, like, you know, nowadays many times when somebody arrives, let's say, at an airport, and then all the devotees are there offering obeisances, this and that, you know, just people just don't understand, so generally that's avoided. You know, that kind of situation. But then when you go to the temple or someplace or somewhere where there won't be a disturbance, then that's fine.
Sorry, I'm not sure what you said.
I was saying if the situation is inappropriate, somebody has arrived at an international airport, it's full of all kinds of karmi people, and then a bunch of devotees come in and, you know, Hari Bol and start offering their obeisances and get in the way of the people coming out with all their carts and everything like that, and everybody's just looking at them and can't figure out what's going on, then that may be seen as inappropriate. So then one offers obeisances in another place where it's more appropriate. Like that, you know. But if it's like before they used to do a Prabhupada, then you have 50 people there, 100 people there doing kirtan, they know something's going on. And so then it makes the whole thing. But the other is they don't really know what's happening. So then it's not so important. But here in the temple or, you know, other places where it's natural in the town, these are the culture, these are the etiquettes, and there's no problem in doing that. And if there's a doubt, one can always ask. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Jai Govardhan. Does that make sense? Okay. The same for Jai Patakamaya, no problem. Like that, and for any situation, it's the proper thing. Standing up when they're coming, when they're going, these are the proper thing. Because the life airs go up anyway. So if you don't stand up, then they go out of the body. Anyway. So that's the natural thing to stand up.
The life airs go up because?
Out of respect.
So you mean they are independent?
Yeah, well, air is air. That's what it's run by the Bible. It's not run by us. So they just go up. And if you stand up, then they'll catch them. And if you sit there, then they go up and they don't come back. So then you become weakened.
You've been cooking for the little, teaching the little girls how to cook today?
Like that. I haven't really learned anything. I don't know.
I think Sonia
is really nice and very tender. prasad, I'm not a cook. So I need to keep reading the very simple things. And I don't know if I can dare invite a great cook.
If what you cook is nice, doesn't matter if it's simple. Okay. What was it then? I can't remember the two. Bahuvasva and one other devotee. When Krishna went to his house and he peeled bananas and gave Krishna the banana peels and threw the bananas away.
Yeah, but I
wouldn't compare my emotion to that. Yeah, I understand. The point is the simplicity. Also, Krishna would eat at Vidura's house and not eat with Duryodhana. So Duryodhana would give, you know, all the opulence of royal cooking, while Vidura is just some chapatis and some simple subject like that. So Krishna would rather eat there. So that's not the